This is the Angry GM, and I am here again proofreading aloud an article that I am about to post for early access consumption. And so the proofread aloud will probably follow a day or two later, depending on when it can be revised. I've got plenty of background noise going today. There's trucks, a lawnmower, motorcycles going up and down the street outside. So this should be a fantastic time. Of course, I'm joined by my special guest, Squeaky Chair. So we are ready to, you know, make this just about the shittiest production it can possibly be. But then again, it's a proofread aloud, and I basically do an entire reading in one take. So what do you expect? There will be a supplemental Q&A afterwards, because I do have a live studio audience listening in the Angry Discord studio. And I am joined by my producer, Proselis, now the Royal Metroid GM, who is dressed like Princess Peach. Not literally, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he is. His avatar, the Metroid, is dressed like Princess Peach. Anywho, now I'm going to start reading the article that I have decided to call How to Manage Combat Like a True Game Master. This article is yet another in my long-running master course, True Game Mastery. The series is best followed from the start, so, you know, start there. Here's a link to the course index. Link. Not only is today's lesson... Whoops, there's an extra word in there. And we're starting off with the errors right out of the gate. Great. Not only is today's lesson a continuation of all the ones before it, which are required reading now, no more rehashes, but it's also one of several lessons to do with running things that aren't supposed to call encounters. And it's also the second of two lessons about running combat non-encounters. If you ain't done the prerequisite coursework and you've not been practicing your initiative game, you're gonna get lost today and no one's coming to save you. Proceed at your own risk. How to manage combat like a true game master. Welcome back. I have no idea how to finish that sentiment. I've been coming up with different clever addresses at the start of each of these lessons. But a few weeks ago, I made the mistake of calling you adepts or some such thing like that, and the dumbasses in my supporter Discord server lost their friggin' minds over the apparent and unexpected praise. Some thought I'd gone soft or gone off my gourd. Others dropped to their knees and chanted, "We're not worthy." It was a whole big annoying thing. All because I needed a word and grabbed the official title for second level clerics in the Mensa revision of basic Dungeons & Dragons. So that little game's over now. From now on, I'm just gonna call you all dumbasses. Welcome, dumbass. Today, I'm continuing the two-part lesson I started last time about how true game masters resolve things when an encounter turns into a combat. Because that's how true game masters say it. Right, dumbass? There are no combat encounters. There are encounters that turn into combats, and they need to be resolved. The last lesson... Wow, I have a lot of typos today. Why is that? Okay, we need a sip here. The last lesson was all about the moment when an encounter turns to combat. And how to start a combat. This lesson's about how to keep combat running past that moment, how to narrate and pace combat once a fight started out and initiative's been determined. Long story short, you manage combat the same way you manage everything else, but better. Combat's no different from any other in-game situation. And the reason mere game executors get tripped up resolving combat is that they try to treat it differently. True game masters know managing combat's the same as managing the rest of the game. It's just way less forgiving. True game masters know they've really got to be on the ball when a fight breaks out. Why? It's like this. Combat must be tense, exciting, fast-paced, and demanding. If it's not, it turns into a dull, overly mechanical, mathematical slog of a board game. Fortunately, the skills I've already taught you will let you deliver a top-notch combat experience. But you've really got to nail your speed, ownership, and clarity. Keeping up the pace. You know you can't let your game sink into the swamp of mechanical slog. But when you're resolving combat, it's really easy to find your game sinking into a suffocating mire like a beloved horse in a children's fantasy movie. The problem's that combat is pretty much the most mechanically rigorous thing you can handle in any role-playing game. But combat's also supposed to be the fastest-paced, most exciting situation in any role-playing game. See the problem? Owning the game. You know your job's to describe everything that happens in the world, and you know that nothing happens unless and until you describe it. Your players don't describe actions or outcomes. Players declare intentions. They tell you what their character wants to do, what they're trying to do, and not what they actually do. The problem's that, in combat, players tend to get overexcited and speak in terms of what their characters do instead of what they attempt. And they like to show off. Meanwhile, game masters, in their zeal to keep combat moving, tend to skip describing outcomes narratively, especially because the mechanical resolutions seem to do it for them. If the players already described their attack and the dice said they hit for 7 damage, what's really left to describe? Speaking clearly. You know you must tell the players, clearly and concisely, everything their characters see, hear, perceive, and know. That's vitally important in combat. The players will use every bit of information you give them to make strategic decisions with the lives of their characters at stake. And yet, many game masters utterly starve their players of information. Why? Well, how long have you got? The problem is, it happens for a lot of reasons. Some of it's down to the aforementioned narration skipping, but of both the scene setting and outcome describing varieties, and just letting miniatures, maps, and mechanics do the talking. Some of it's down to game masters getting so trapped in the abstraction of turn-based action resolution that game masters literally imagine the game like an old-school Final Fantasy fight with creatures taking turns bonking each other on the head and then waiting for an ATB bar to fill. If you've got minis, maps, grids, dice, hit points, initiative trackers, and fancy status indicators, what more do the players need to know anyway? And now a sidebar. Minis and maps aren't narration. Whether running in meat space or on the grid, as in the digital frontier, not a map marked with squares, true game masters know pretty maps and fancy terrain and tokens and minis are all just visual aids. And true game masters usually run their fights as if the minis and maps weren't there. At most, they'll sometimes say, one of the goblins, this one here, charges Ardric. You must be able to resolve a combat, any combat, with nothing but your voice, some dice, and a piece of paper. All the other shit just helps clarify what you're saying and provides a visual record. If you've never run a fight without visual aids, it's time to start. Run one fight every session with nothing but your game mastering skills, from now on and forever after. It gives your players some practice listening and remembering, too. And now back to the main content of the article and a heading I like to call Declare, Determine, Describe in Combat. You fortunately already know how to do the shit you need to do to resolve combat right. It's all the shit you're already doing. You don't even have to do it differently. You just have to do it well. And if you've been religiously following the Declare, Determine, Describe cycle as I told you to, you're probably already doing it pretty well. And you don't even have to sweat that principal character crap when resolving combat. That's what initiative is for. Inviting the principal character's player to act in combat. Whatever game you're running, unless you're running a stupid game like Dungeon World, there are rules about who goes first in combat. Those rules, the initiative rules, tell you which character's the principal character at any given moment. That's why you use them. Thus, inviting action is as simple as saying, Adam, it's Ardrick's turn. What does he do? That said, during combat, things change a lot, and there's a lot to keep track of. So true game masters often use their action invitations as an opportunity to remind the active player of any conditions, statuses, buffs, debuffs, or ongoing effects, the ongoing issues affecting their character, as well as any imminent threats that might affect their turn. And if they're resolving combat without a grid, or resolving it as if their visual aids didn't exist, true game masters also remind the active player where their character is and what's going on around them. Thus, it's more like invite the principal character's player to act and remind them what's going on. Declaring actions in combat. After your action invitation, the Fabergé egg is in some player's hand, and it's up to them to toss it back by properly declaring their character's actions for the round. True game masters would absolutely love it if games kept that shit simple and if players declared all their actions for an entire round before any got resolved. But modern role-playing games don't give a crap about what true game masters want, so you're going to have to find your own groove here. Likely, you're going to have to spend each character's turn resolving a string of actions, resolving one at a time, each with its own little miniature declare, determine, describe cycle. That's just how it be. Whatever your system du jour demands, make your players declare complete actions before you start resolving them. None of this, I attack, roll the die, 17, roll the die, 6 damage, horseshit. Slap that die out of your dumbass player's hot little hand. I'll tell you when to dice. Who are you attacking and what are you using? Do you plan to move within melee range first, or are you just throwing your greatsword? Don't answer that. It was rhetorical. No, you can't throw a greatsword. Also, stop your players from getting prosy and describey with their actions. If they want to add relevant details that affect the outcome, fine. But players aren't narrators, and, as you'll see below, players aren't privy to the information necessary for proper narration, especially before any dice are rolled. Players declare their character's intention to act. They don't describe their character's actions. Minis and maps. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a sidebar. Minis and maps aren't action declarations either. Players love fiddling with minis, so much so that they'll often move minis on the map rather than verbally describing their character's moves. True game masters put the kibosh on that shit. Make your players use their words. Don't let them touch the miniatures until they've properly declared their character's intent to move. Or don't let them touch the miniatures at all. The miniatures are visual aids. They enhance your narration. It should be on you to move them around as you narrate. And if that pisses you off, just wait until you see the next sidebar. There are lots of good reasons to listen to me on this, but the most important one is this. If the players spend their turns moving playing pieces on a game board, they start treating the game like a board game. And now back to the content. Determining the outcome. In combat. With actions declared, either a full round's worth or one little action at a time, it's on you to determine how each plays out. Even mere game executors get this mostly right. After all, there are chapters full of rules to help you get this shit right. The difference between a mere game executor and a true game master is that the true game master recognizes this as the least important, sloggiest, crappiest part of the process and does their damnedest to get through it as quickly as possible while involving the players as little as possible. Some of you have asked why I skip over the die rolling and mechanical resolution crap in my examples. This here's the reason. Because a true game master does everything to let that shit sink into the background. And they're off! Sorry about that. Just completely disregard that. That was supposed to be muted. just a fun little treat for you there. Describing the outcome in combat. As I've said above, most mere game executors skip this step. Oh, sure, they apply the results of combat actions, they tick off hit points, apply conditions, move tokens, and knock over dead creatures' miniatures on the map with gusto, but they don't actually properly narrate action outcomes. Until you describe something narratively, it hasn't happened. And minis and maps aren't narration. Neither are game mechanics. You don't have to be big or flashy or prosaic. Unless the action deserves it because it's a killing blow or a turning point or something, keep it short and simple. Just say what happened. And remember, even moving across the battlefield counts as an action. Will this slow your game down? Yeah, especially if you ain't been doing it thus far and you're just starting now. But it's one of those paradoxical slowdowns that makes the game feel faster. Besides, as I'm going to explain below, you need to describe outcomes so you can provide some actual useful information later. I don't think the later is necessary or accurate, so I'm going to take the later out. You need to describe outcomes so you can provide some actual useful information. The turn transition. Once the active characters taken all their actions, once the active characters taken all the actions they can take, their turn is over. It's time to invite the next principal character's player, based on the initiative and turn order, to act. And this tiny little transitional moment is the most important thing to master if you want your combats to flow properly. I shit you not. Master your transitions and everyone will crow about your combat pacing. The tricks to smoothly and seamlessly move from outcome describing to action inviting in one deft move that reminds everyone that combat is a chaotic mess of near simultaneous action. Ardric charges the goblin and slashes with his longsword. A spray of blood and the goblin collapses, dying. Nearby, Danae squares off with two goblins, her shimmering shield of faith protecting her as she... What, Dana? What does Danae do? When the pacing egg gets dropped in combat. Managing combat's about keeping everything flowing smoothly. Unfortunately, when you're resolving combat, the Fabergé egg of game pacing gets tossed back and forth a lot. And we all know players have butterfingers, especially when death's on the line. I didn't know what to do with the egg, so I dropped it. It's common in combat for players to panic when their turns come up. So, when you invite a player to act, they'll sometimes emit a sound like, and gradually trail off into silence. That ain't great for pacing. Much as I'd like to tell you to slap any player who doesn't immediately declare an action when asked and then take their turn away, true game masters need to show a little restraint. But they also can't let analysis paralysis, I hate that dumbass term, take hold. If a player doesn't speak up or start shuffling papers when called on, it's okay to prod them. And prod them immediately. Count 3, 2, 1, in your head, then re-invite them to act and remind them of the urgency of the situation. Chris, what does Cabe do? 3, 2, 1. Chris, with combat raging around him, Cabe must act fast. What does he do, Chris? If you're feeling particularly nice, because some of you are soft, you can call attention to situations that demand the character's attention to prod them into action. But don't do that too much or else you're essentially playing the game for the players. Beryllia is unconscious nearby and likely to bleed to death in short order, but Danae is also engaged with an angry goblin. What does she do, Dana? After another 3 count, it's okay to put them on hold or skip their turn. Ardric catches his breath and assesses the situation around him. Meanwhile, Danae is locked in melee with two goblins, her bless spell empowering her. What does she do, Danae? I'll take that. Yoink! Many games include talents, traits, actions, mechanics, and special abilities that let players... I'm going to take a sip and try that again. The heading goes, I'll take that. Yoink! Many games include talents, traits, actions, mechanics, and special abilities that let player characters, and non, act outside the normal turn order. Effectively, lots of modern games let players snatch the Fabergé egg of pacing out of someone else's hands. And that's especially true of a certain revision of a certain game that sounds like Coprolith Emission, that rhymes with Coprolith Emission. That rhymes with Coprolith Emission. There are game design reasons for that, and they're stupid. And obviously, I have strong opinions about the proliferation of interrupts and reactions springing up across games like... Never mind what it's like. Now, a little insight for those of you listening to the proofread aloud. Originally, I was going to go a little farther into in that sentence and refer to the proliferation of interrupts and reactions in terminology that was clearly meant to describe a genital disease on someone who sells themselves, and then cut it off partway through. But I figured that was a little bit too much. So we're just going to move. I'm just leaving it there. But those of you know, these are the sort of things, you know, that I actually spend a lot of time thinking about when I'm writing these articles is like, do I really need to make a joke about a hooker with a venereal disease to get my point across? Anyway, look, lots of games have rules that let players and monsters screw with the pacing whenever they want. And there's nothing you can do but cope with that shit. Just do your best. Sorry. Sidebar. Players describing outcomes. Some game masters, you know who you are, think their game's somehow better when they let players spurt their own little blobs of crappy player narration all over it. And that sentence probably tells you exactly what I think of the practice. To put it politely, I strongly discourage you from rewarding players killing blows and critical hits, or whatever, by inviting them to describe the action. Why? Well, there's not just one reason, there are dozens. There are lots of ways, from risking the game's consistent tone to robbing you of the opportunity to convey useful information instead of improbable awesomeness and a host of others, that the practice can screw up your game, and the benefits are dubious at best. Hell, most players don't even consider it a prize when you put them on the spot and force them to narrate. Yeah, I know, your players are different. This is one of those things that's totally fine and fun until the day it ain't. And that's the day you discover what you traded away and that you can't get back. I'd say, trust me, but I know you won't listen. And now back to the main content with declare, determine, describe. In combat. For NPCs. Unless you've got some serious intra-party conflict issues, your players' characters ain't the only critters on most battlefields. There are probably a few enemy combatants across the way, and there may be a few summoned beasts, pets, allies, and henchpersons scattered around. And while they ain't player characters, they still get turns. How do true game masters handle NPC turns? As quickly as friggin' possible, that's how. First, remember that NPCs don't take actions the way players do. People have asked me about the declare, determine, describe cycle for NPCs, and that's technically a stupid question, because there's technically no such thing. Game masters don't have to declare actions to themselves, do they? An NPC's action is just another thing that happens in the world. This, suddenly, a huge wave explodes over the ship's rail and surges across the deck. Ardric, standing beside the port rail, is thrown off his feet and sent sprawling. 20 damage, Adam. He's being driven by the wave across the deck. The starboard railing is coming fast, and beyond, a 30-foot plunge into a raging sea. What does Ardric do, Adam? That is no different from this. The dragon rears up, towering above the party. Its head snakes out suddenly. How can anything so big move so fast? Its maw open as it plunges toward Ardric. He's bitten for 20 points of damage and knocked prone. The dragon rears up for another strike. What does Ardric do, Adam? NPCs don't declare actions. You decide what they do, you describe it, and you roll whatever dice you've got to roll to make it happen. Crazy as it sounds, an NPC's turn is just one long bit of scene setting and transition that comes between one player acting and the next. That said, if you do it artfully, describing actions as they come, rolling dice at the right moment, and then describing the outcome, it'll look a hell of a lot like an abbreviated declare, determine, describe cycle. Sidebar. General Patton. True game master. Yes, I've read my Keith Ammon, and the dude's right. Monsters are smart, they should fight to win. But running combat's about pacing first and strategy second. So while you should play your monsters to the best of your strategic abilities, you should also play them like you're playing speed chess. And that's why it's important to know what your monsters can do and why they're fighting. It helps you make good decisions fast. Monsters must act immediately. Your narration shouldn't pause between the previous player's turn and the current monster's turn. And that sometimes means unleashing the monster's strongest move on the most convenient target. As General Patton said, a good plan violently executed now is better than a perfect plan that takes 15 fucking minutes of thinking and square counting and page flipping to work out. Telegraphing. Never attack unannounced. If you get the combat version of the declare, determine, describe cycle described above, and take... Yeah. If you master... Let's do that. If you master the combat... If you master the combat version of the declare, determine, describe cycle described above, and take to heart the sidebar advice... You'll be resolving combats with all due speed and ownership. But your combat narration will still be missing something vital. Clarity. And clarity is about resolving combat with honor. It's about giving your players all the information they need to fight fair and win. It's about telegraphing. Video gamers know that telegraphing is all about enemy attack animations. Whoops, I'm trying to fix formatting without breaking my narration, and it's not working. Okay, formatting fixed, here we go. Video gamers know that telegraphing is all about enemy attack animations, specifically about the part of every attack animation known as the wind-up or anticipation phase. When Grim Matchstick takes a long, deep breath, you know a fireball is coming. When Muktarok pops out onto the surface and faces you, you know he's going to send a sweeping spray of sludge across the battlefield. And when Margit the Fell raises his staff thing above his and behind his head, he's going to do a downward strike and then spin. Telegraphing's how you know what's coming. And knowing what's coming is what lets you make tactical decisions. Telegraphing ain't just about announcing attacks. Not even in video games. Telegraphing actually uses enemy animations to blast players with useful information about their foes. Without telegraphing, the best a player can do is spam their favorite attack every round. Does that sound familiar? In tabletop role-playing games, you can't use animation to telegraph, so you have to use narration. And you have to use narration. If you don't telegraph and telegraph constantly, you ain't a true game master. Get your water wings and head back to the kiddie pool. Sorry. And if you ever complain that your players just race their foes to zero hit points, my first question won't be, what system are you using? Is it a crappy one? Nope, I'm going to say, do you telegraph pretty much every time you open your mouth? If your answer is no, it ain't the system screwing up your game, it's you. You're the reason your combats suck. Every bit of narration in combat is a chance to telegraph, so never, ever skip or outsource to your players even one tiny little bit of combat narration. Narration, not numbers. You may be thinking, if telegraphing is good, sharing statistics is better. It isn't. Telegraphing isn't something done with game speak. It's narrative. Why? For two reasons. First, if you tell the players flat out the mechanical facts of the situation, you're robbing them of the chance to deduce, guess, experiment, or feel out the facts from the narrative. Yeah. I read that wrong. I wrote it right, I read it wrong, and I'm going to take another sip and try again. First, if you tell the players flat out the mechanical facts of the situation, you're robbing them of the chance to deduce, guess, experiment, or feel out the facts from the narration. The creature is immune to piercing damage, leaves the players nothing to figure out. Your arrows bounce off its hide, they're not penetrating its armor, leaves questions. Does the creature resist piercing damage, or does it resist all physical damage, or all non-magical damage? What are the limits of its abilities, and should we stop wasting valuable resources until we work them out? Second, as I've stated before, speaking in numbers and mechanics reinforces the idea in the players' subconscious minds that they're playing a highly mechanical game of random numbers, statistics, and pawns on a grid. Every bit of game speak chips away at the very idea of a role-playing game in every player's head. True game masters use narration to imply mechanics. They don't blurt out numbers. Stats, status, and strategy. Proper telegraphing techniques are about communicating three broad kinds of information in your narration: enemy statistics, enemy status, and enemy strategies. All the shit on the stat block, attacks, defenses, ability scores, saves, resistances, vulnerabilities, traits, challenge rating, and everything else, all the shit on the stat block, that's statistics. Remember, everything on that stat block represents a fact about the monster in the world. That means, in the right circumstances, a character can perceive or deduce every one of those stats. Qualitatively, at least. Thick hides, shells, and equipment hint at armor class. Muscle mass and size convey strength and constitution. Movements reveal dexterity. Word choice, alertness, and the look in the creature's eyes, they all demonstrate intelligence and wisdom, and so on. There is no piece of information on a stat block that the right creature in the right situation can't perceive or deduce. Not one. The creature's status is all about how it's doing. Sure, that includes current health, healthy, battered, critically injured, hovering on death's door, but it also includes afflictions, conditions, and magical enhancements. Moreover, status includes mental state. Is the creature enraged? Is it fighting tenaciously, or is it getting ready to nope the hell out of there? Is it cowering? Is it cowed? Is it an enchanted thrall? Strategy is all about how the monster's fighting and how it plans to fight next. Is it going to keep fighting on its turn, or is it ready to withdraw? Is it about to change targets? Is it getting ready to cast a spell or unleash a powerful area attack? The truth is, revealing a creature's strategy is basically about vaguely pre-declaring the creature's next round action. Doing so allows the players to react to the creature's actions instead of just unleashing attack after attack. Maybe taking defensive actions against big attacks or else readying countermeasures. Those are good things. You want your players to thwart your enemy's strategies. That's way more fun than just throwing out another flurry of eldritch blasts, isn't it? How to telegraph like a true game master. Telegraphing's easier than you think, though it does take practice. It's like this. Whenever you deliver some narration in combat, ask yourself, what can I tell the players about their foes now? Every bit of narration's an opportunity to telegraph. Never pass it up. In theory. In practice, you won't really blurt out new information every time you open your mouth. Sometimes there won't be anything to say. Sometimes you'll end up repeating yourself, which is fine. Repetition is good. It's really just a matter of saying, before I describe this outcome, or as I set this scene, or whatever, what information can I include? And then, you know, doing it, weaving it in. Mindset is everything here. You want to train yourself to see narration as a chance to share information, not a way to make fights fun and exciting. That said, when you telegraph is more important than how you telegraph. When to share what? Look, I know I basically just said to follow the ABCs of telegraphing, which is always be telegraphing, and I meant it. I want you to change your relationship with combat narration. But it's important to telegraph the right shit at the right time. So after you've spent a few sessions practicing the mindset, then, and only then, is it time to think about when you telegraph what. First, always telegraph status information when it changes. Immediately when it changes. Don't wait for a critter's turn to reveal it's gone from scratched up to full-on hurting. That's why bloodied and staggered conditions are so useful, as is just telling players when a creature's one good strong hit from death, roughly speaking. No, don't ask, just eyeball it, come on. Don't neglect other status changes. When the slaver dies and the goblin's morale breaks, tell the players. Immediately. Let them know the second that hobgoblin hits the ground that the goblin's morale balloons have deflated and they're looking for an out. Likewise, whenever a foe changes its strategy, telegraph that shit. If the foe's doing the same thing round after round, don't say anything. But when it's about to change targets, change attacks, or do something different, or do something big, warn the players. This is where telegraphing goes from skill to art. The earlier you telegraph a foe's strategy, the more time the players have to react. Or rather, the more players' turns will come up before the foe enacts the strategy. Telegraphing is a hidden difficulty slider, but it's also a balancing factor. The bigger the action, the sooner you telegraph it. To the point where boss monsters' biggest, most powerful, most iconic actions, like breath weapons, should be declared when the boss finishes its previous turn. Use the frequency with which the foe can use the attack as a guide. Attacks that can only be used once per combat should be telegraphed early. Big attacks that can come every round only need a turn or two of telegraphing. In practice, telegraphing a foe's big attack might look like this. Ardric's attack slays the goblin easily. These pathetic creatures are no match for your party. The goblins realize it too. They're looking nervous. The hobgoblin warlock is angry, though. He's raising his staff and screaming invectives. He's preparing something big. Beryllia sees it too. It's her turn. What does she do, Beth? Strategic and status telegraphing are about calling out changes and providing warnings. Statistical telegraphing, on the other hand, it's something you sprinkle wherever and whenever you can. It's the sort of thing you use to explain actions and events. You've got to be opportunistic about it. Okay, Cabe's attack missed. How can I describe the outcome in a way that says something about the monster's stat block? So really, telegraphing's down to three basic things. Something changed. I'd better tell the players. Something big's coming. I'd better warn the players. Something's happened. What can I reveal to the players? That's how you telegraph. And now, a sidebar. Know thy monsters. Running combat masterfully is a high-pressure thing. It ain't enough to know the rules and keep turns moving. You've got to pick your enemy's actions quickly, but strategically, and you've got to resolve them fast, preferably without breaking your narrative flow. And every word should telegraph something about the bad guys. It's impossible. That was also supposed to be muted. Like, the audio was muted. Why is this happening? Don't... Yeah. Okay. Whatever. It's impossible to run a good combat if you don't know your monsters. You can't run a good fight if you haven't seen the stat blocks before the fight starts. And if you find yourself trying to do so, pause your game for 2 minutes and read the stat block from top to bottom. A 2 minute delay is worth avoiding a 20 minute sloggy suckfest of a fight. Better yet, review the monsters in your upcoming games. Review them actively. Don't just read their stat blocks, take notes. Highlight shit that seems important. Actively prepare your game. If you ain't prepping with a pencil, some notepaper, and a highlighter, you ain't prepping at all. You're cramming. The end. Or is it? So that's it. That's how to manage combat like a true game master. Managing combat is about speed, ownership, and clarity. Yeah, there's a missing letter in that word that made it a different word. Let's try that again. Managing combat is about speed, ownership, and clarity. Master the declare, determine, describe cycle. Never skip a step. Fully narrate your combats like the dice, the minis, and the maps don't exist. Get through the mechanical bits as quickly as possible and bookend them with narration. Transition from one to the next, from one turn to the next. Transition from one turn to the next smoothly, preferably without pause, and recognize that monster turns aren't turns, they're just part of the narration between player turns. Every time you open your mouth to narrate in combat, ask yourself what you can reveal narratively about the foe's statistics, statuses, and strategies. Tell the players when statuses and strategies change, and give the players plenty of warning when big actions are coming. Sprinkle statistical telegraphing throughout your narration as the chance arises. I know that's a lot to think about. And I know also that lots of you appreciate the examples I've provided of game masterful table talk. And I know this lesson would have benefited from way more examples. And that's why I've got some bonus content coming in the next week. I'm going to publish a big ol' example of combat play. It'll show you what a few rounds of combat should sound like when you master these skills. So look forward to that. Meanwhile, next time's about traps and hazards, which are a lot easier to handle than this combat shit and barely worth a lesson at all. And that is the end of the proofread aloud. So I'll get this posted and goodbye. And then I'm going to switch tracks and there will be a supplemental Q&A in just a moment.